All right, I'm back in town. Here we go. We're doing podcasts. I had a cool week, a really cool week. The NFLPA has a collegiate bowl, like the Senior Bowl, but the NFLPA's version of the Senior Bowl. There's the East-West Shrine Game, the Hulu Bowl, the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl, the Senior Bowl. And so the PA asked me if I would coach the tight ends, one of the teams, the American team. There was the national team and the American team. And so I was absolutely pumped about having that opportunity to do that. I got a coach with Hugh Jackson and Hugh Jackson's staff. Marvin Lewis was the other staff. So I go into this with the idea like, yeah, you know, it's a college all-star game. You probably roll out there on a Monday and coach for a couple days and get through, you know, 20 plays and rock and roll and go play a bowl game. I actually played in the Senior Bowl. I should remember it. I mean, I played in the Senior Bowl with Marvin Lewis's staff. So it was funny that I come back and I was on the other staff, but Marvin Lewis was in the next bowl game that I was actually in.
It's full circle.
Full circle back to Marvin Lewis. So I go into this thought process, like we'll coach him up a couple days and we'll rock and roll. And I end up going out there last Saturday. I was there for 10 days.
That's awesome.
It was awesome.
I wish.
But it was 10 days and it was like a full NFL week. It wasn't as intense for a coaching staff as an NFL week would be. But we're out there and it's like, we're going to meet at 7 o'clock and we're going to go through the installation with the team until 10 o'clock. And then you got to grab these guys to try to have individual meetings until they get on the bus to go to the practice. And then it was a full-on practice, 2.5-hour practice, a couple of the days in pads. And go back, and then we would watch the film as a staff, and then you'd go watch the film again with the staff and the players. It was a big deal. Like, I was busy.
And this is the first time you were invited to be a coach?
Yeah, this was the first opportunity I've had to coach anybody on any level other than 10-year-old kids or 5-year-old girl softball. So it was really fun. I had 4 tight ends that I got to work with. Nate Whiting out of Iowa. And I had Rashad Berry out of Ohio State and Woody Brandom, who was from Sam Houston State, and Cheyenne C.J. O'Grady, who was at Arkansas. So I had 4 tight ends that I got a chance to work with. And they had a busy week as well. Like, it wouldn't have been a normal week to play a game because we would finish with the players at 5:36, and then they would meet with scouts until 10 o'clock. There was 4 to 5 scouts from every single team there. Like the Redskins had 4 scouts. I talked to our scouts a lot. And, you know, it's really funny. It's like I'm out there coaching and all the scouts are coming up to me and saying, well, what's this guy like in the meeting? And we actually got to the point in the halfway through the second, after the second practice in the coaches' meetings where I was getting yelled at because I was defending the players. I was like, no, he's thinking this or doing this. Like, Cooley, you're just going to stick up for your guys, aren't you? But that was always my theory as a coach was you have to treat them like they're your kids and you have to treat them like you're responsible for what they're doing and their mistakes. And so to me, it was like own their mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I'll take the blame for it and I'll stick up for my guys. And so, you know, I would always, through the last 6 years, if someone asked me what I felt about a player, tell you exactly how I feel about a player. But now when we're coaching that player, like I'm going to tell you the positives on that player. I just couldn't help it but say, like, these are the great things that he does. What about the bad things? I don't think he's got anything bad. I got to find a better way to get through to him or a better way to coach him. If he's doing something that I don't believe in, I got to find a way to get through to this guy and to coach this guy up in the right way. And so it was really cool. We went out last, like I said, last Saturday, but the Saturday before. Mm-hmm. And first of all, apparently I had the wrong email with the PA, so I felt like I was a non-responsive jerk because I should have been getting a lot of this stuff, but yeah. I had a missing letter in my email. Oh. So we had the playbook like 3 days before. But fortunately, the playbook was West Coast.
So you're very familiar.
Very familiar. So to me, when you go through the playbook, it took me, you give me an hour with this playbook and I would have went out and played no problem whatsoever. But I mean, we went in, and there are, I mean, you can see my playbook's fairly thick. There were 20 runs, and there were 7 or 8 different protections, and there were probably 40 different pass concepts, at least 30 different pass concepts, some screens, some different stuff off of it. And in West Coast, there's West Coast language that's carried over forever since Bill Walsh started running West Coast stuff. Like, for example, 20 teams run West Coast in the league, at least, I would say. So if you had a slant on one side and a flat, 20 teams in the NFL install would call that Dragon. And if you had 2 slants, 20 teams in the league would call it Lion. But what I'm essentially saying is anybody that's playing the league's heard this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Protection, a 6-man protection. Everyone in the league essentially calls 6-man protection jet protection. Or you've at least heard. My guys hadn't heard one term. Not one of them had heard one term. So you're talking about installing a playbook essentially from scratch.
Wow.
With the language. Like you're learning a language from scratch. So it was definitely interesting teaching them some of the playbook, some of the stuff, going through it, some of the defenses, like they haven't looked at any of that stuff.
How long did it take them to grasp it?
Oh my gosh. The first day I looked at, as we went through the first, because we cut the installation up into 3 different days. And the first day you look around the room and.
Were they just like blank stares? Like what's going on?
We decided we would divide up the installation in half with the walkthrough in the hotel lobby in mm-hmm. between half so they could get up and move around and stuff. The walkthrough was like no one had heard a word.
like wandering.
But they
around.
Hadn't even heard the formations. mm-hmm. So it was wild. Like double right. Double was 2 on one side, 2 on the other side. And you got guys that have never heard double right. But on the other staff, it was a lot of college style offense and one worded. And so Santana Moss was actually coach receivers for the other team. So he was out there looking at this college offense saying to me, I've never heard any of this stuff. So the other team picked it up easier because they've heard a lot of the college stuff. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting. But by the third day, we were rocking and rolling. Like it was great. They picked it up. They got it. They started to understand it. Now, it wasn't always perfect, but they got it going. This game was funny, too. It had some really interesting rules, the PA game.
Like what?
We did a 2-minute warning at the end of every quarter. You got 2 timeouts a quarter. There was a 2-minute warning at the end of every quarter.
Hmm.
And then at the end of the quarter, the ball just went to the other team who didn't. It was like a half. At the end of the quarter was essentially, there were 4 halves to the game. So if you got the ball first to start the game,
mm-hmm.
when the quarter ended, the other team got the ball.
And it was still 15-minute quarters?
Yeah. Hmm. It was still 15-minute quarters, yeah. But the other team got the ball at the end of the quarter. You could only go 2-minute drill if inside of 2 minutes. So that was really interesting. Defensively, they could only play 3 coverages. They could only play cover 3, cover 2, or man-to-man. And if they had cover 3, their safety had one safety had to start in between the hash marks. Mm-hmm. So it was like you didn't even have to worry about reading coverages. There were 2 safeties. You're playing cover 2. There mm-hmm. one safety playing cover 3 or cover 1. They could only line up in 2 different fronts. If we had the front is the sorry to anyone that's listening that I'm doing too much football, but the front or the front 7 guys, or in if we had 1 tight end, 3 receivers, you could only have 6 guys in the front, and the front had to be the same every single time. You couldn't blitz. You could only rush 4 at any given time. There was no intentional grounding rule, which was frustrating because we took a couple sacks in the game. And you're like, dude, there's no intentional grounding. You're about to get sacked. Just spike the ball on the ground. Just mm-hmm. throw it into the dirt. There's literally no intentional grounding whatsoever. There's no instant replay at all, which cost us because on one drive, we scored 2 touchdowns on the drive that would have been overturned easily by instant replay.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, huh. I mean, I didn't care if we won it. I cared if we won or lost the game because the guys cared if we won or lost the game. But going into it, it didn't matter if we won or lost the game. I just wanted my guys to play really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it's funny. As you go through this stuff, I had 4 guys. And all four of them were unique, diverse personalities. One of them was probably more sensitive than the rest of them. One of them was a little bit attention deficit. One of them was like, tell me and I'll know it this second. And another one had a little bit of anxiety going on throughout the week. And you're like, so you're coaching to four completely different personalities. Now, it's probably not always like that, but I had four and they all got along great. And they all had fun and they all enjoyed it. And I think a couple of the guys that want to come out here and work out with me before they get through the
that'd be really cool.
The draft and the stuff. I'll come and do it again. So that was really cool. But it was an amazing experience. It was great to be with a staff, to be with a group of coaches, to be with an entire team of players. These kids are fun. They're so much fun. And the cool thing about these bowl games is there's a ton of scouts, and this is their future's kind of hinging on the next few months of this stuff. So you got the best side of everybody. Like, you got all their attention, you got all of their effort, you got all of their focus, you got it was you got the best side of everybody, and so they were all thrilled to be out there. And then it's we were in LA, so it's great. We had we played in the Rose Bowl. I'd never been in the Rose Bowl.
That's really cool.
I know. It was top to bottom one of the coolest experiences I've had in a long time. I absolutely loved it out there. And so we lost, by the way.
That's okay.
We lost 30-20 in a game where the other team had only one penalty called on them until the end of the third quarter, and we had 16. Pretty fishy right there. But it's also funny, you know, as you go through this stuff, like, every single day you had to have a plan as a coach. Like, what are we going to do in individual today? What are we going to do? What are you going to work on in this period? You had to have a plan of when you had time to coach them, how you wanted to coach them. You had to have a plan of how to kind of motivate them. Like, I had a really fun game put together where I wrote 15 plays down from start to finish as our plays in our offense went. And then I made 16 mistakes or 17 mistakes in the plays. This wasn't my initial, this was an idea that I expanded on, but I wanted them to find the mistakes. We called it the script search. So they had to find the mistakes.
Yeah.
So for example, if this is a play from the game, gun double left near, 12 Wilson blackjack, zebra quick. Mm-hmm. So if I said gun double left far, the running back would be on the wrong side of the quarterback to be able to run that play. So they had to find like those little things. But you go through some of that, and I made all these mistakes, and I awarded the winner with a prize.
So what was the prize?
I'll just leave it. There was a prize given to the winner. It wasn't quite Odell Beckham from the last week, which was insane, insane, insane. I'm sure everybody listening saw that thing. But I have a whole new offense that I essentially installed and learned. And you know, as much as you're around football, there's always new things to learn and new concepts to pick up and new ways to teach it. And they teach it in different ways. They installed different than I've ever installed. Watch film a little different than I've watched film. So that was a lot of fun. We had a route that I would put in any offense that was really, really cool. It two by two, two receivers on either side. The inside guys can run 10 yards and turn around either way. Kind of like a little option. Mm-hmm. But if they had somebody down outside of them at 5 yards, they could go like they were running outside to the corner and then hook inside. So it was really, I was talking to Coach Jackson and I was saying, if I would have had this, I would have caught 100 more balls. Like an option to do three different things on a route for me would have been heaven. Mm-hmm. Like you can't beat me if I can do three different things on this deal. So we had some of these fun concepts that I hadn't seen before. So it was good for me to have had that installation. The whole thing was good for me. I mean, being around the staff, being around these guys, it was good for me. I wanted to go through this. One of the coaches, as we were starting the day, we were all having this discussion about players and learning. And Bob Wiley, who's a famous offensive line coach in this league for a long time, went through the four stages of learning a new skill, which I wanted to go through because I loved this. But you can look up Bob Wiley. He went on this entire stretching rant in Hard Knocks. Like, so if you Google Bob Wiley, you'll see his Hard Knocks. And he in Hard Knocks, he was joking about the players stretching. And he said, "What do you think, we stretched World War II? Stretched before we took Normandy?" Or he's gone through the... Anyway, you can look that up. But Bob's great. So, but I like this. This impacted me. To start, he said, they don't know what they don't know, which is 100% true. And you can't give them credit for what they don't know. And then I thought this was really important. For any player, if you want to make them good, great, you have to bring their weaknesses up to their strengths. So many coaches now in today's world want to take a player's strengths and do only that with them. And they become tendencies on a huge level. But if you're not willing to coach them and bring them up to their strengths, then their weaknesses are really exposed. Or you're exposing your offense because someone knows that you can't do something with certain players. So it started with one of the four stages. You got to tell them what they have to work on. That's also something that a lot of coaches don't do, or a lot of players don't want to hear, is what are your weaknesses? What do you need to work on to learn a new skill? People don't know what they don't need to work on. Two, the second stage, repetitions. As a coach, you have to first understand how many reps does any given kid need. Some guys hear it and they go do it. Some guys write it and they go do it. Some guys have to do it 100 times. Some guys have to do it. And the more you do it, obviously, the better you get at it. And I'll get to that in stage three. But when the player leaves the room, he's going to forget what you told him. It's true. There's a conscious awareness of what you told them, but there's an incompetence because they'll forget what you told them. So they have to understand and be able to repeat the complexity of the task. I'm reading, I wrote notes. This wasn't like a take notes situation, by the way, but I'm just such a dork that I took notes on all this stuff because I loved it. Stage three, he called conscious competence. My notes aren't that good, but conscious competence. And this is the player can do the task. Once he can do the tasks after the reps, how well can he do it? But does he still have to think about it? Like, you walk to the line of scrimmage, you understand the task, you understand what you're being told, but how much do you still have to think about it? And in saying that, a lot of guys in the NFL can play in this stage, which is stage three. You can play with an understanding of the task, but you still have to consciously think about it every time. It's in your mind. What's my task? For me, stage three was at least the first half of a season for every new offense. Like, and I was smart. I got it. You know, but you learn an entire new language and you still have to say it again in your head as you're walking to the line of scrimmage as a player. Like, okay, let's say I got double right. 200 jet alley. What is alley, alley, alley? And then you go like ALL, all go. And then it's all go. Alley was all go for us. And so, but then you have to think about, where's my landmark on all go? And where's the safety on all go? For example, to the game, I told my players, if there's only one safety, you run right up the angle, width and depth up to the numbers, and the quarterback will read that safety. If the safety goes to you, he should throw it on the other side. Mm-hmm. First play of the game, my guy goes running up the numbers. The quarterback throws it at him. The safety had moved to his side. He doesn't even look. It like hits him in the back. Oh. Comes off. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, well, I thought we weren't going to throw it to us if the safety went to us. I'm like, well, you probably shouldn't have. But do you want the ball or do you not want the ball? But in his mind, he was consciously thinking about that task. And then stage four, which is the best stage, which is where you win, is unconscious competence. You do not have to really think about it before you just do it. It happens in your brain immediately. And now some DC travel wisdom. The old saying goes, if you want to go fast, go to Dulles. The airport access highway gets you there from DC in as little as 30 minutes. But if you want to go far, well, also go to Dulles. where you can fly nonstop to 145 destinations. That's 45% more than any other airport in the region. Find out how else you can travel wisely at flydulles.com/wise. Whether you're on the field or in the classroom, the Washington Redskins believe learning should be fun. That's why we've partnered with youth entrepreneurs to bring their engaging, hands-on style of learning to classrooms in the D.C. metro area. Youth Entrepreneurs curriculum was created by educators for educators. That means it's flexible, fun, and absolutely free. To learn more about Youth Entrepreneurs and how to experience it for yourself, go visit getye.org. Quarterbacks that have success are in stage four. The best quarterbacks in the league see a defense, and it calculates in their mind immediately. They do not have to add it up. They do not have to do numbers to it. They process the next step because they've seen it over and over, and they process it without even thinking about it. Yeah. This is awesome for me to verbalize this unconscious competence, to attempt to verbalize it. Unconscious competence, because as you look for quarterbacks in this league, I think with an understanding that when you see a guy operate that fast that you can say unconscious competence, that's the guy that you want. If he has that in his offense, if he has that in his system, if he sees and diagnoses defenses without, you start to realize that he's making decisions subconsciously. Like, he's just making decisions without thinking about the decision that needs to be made. His body's going through that process for him.
So on average, though, how long do you think
that everyone's takes? Different.
Yeah.
So the next note is, as a coach, really, truly understand how a kid learns. Ask him. So I went through that. They don't all know how they learn. At 20, 19, 20, 21 years old, they don't all know the best process that they learn. One of my kids struggled big time, and he was smart. Smart kid with our, here we go, run through on paper the installation. The next day, just he and I sat down and watched practice for an hour and a half every play, and we talked about it as we watched it. He needed it seen in real action, and then he was fine. But without putting video to the paper, like, he saw it on paper, he went out and did it in real life, and it didn't register until he saw the video of not only him doing it, but the rest of the guys doing it. Mm-hmm. That was so true. I mean, how does he learn? How does the next guy process and learn? So if you don't understand as a coach how this player learns, and you don't ask this player, or you don't help this player understand what the mechanism is that he learns best by, he won't learn. He can't get to stage four. I don't know if this is a formal study or not. This was just Bob's version of the four stages of how he perceived. I don't know if you look this up or you can't, but I just thought it was fascinating. So I wrote it all down. Another one of our coaches went through this. You tell them what they have to do, but they have to repeat it and they have to do it. I'm like, yeah, that's part of it. I mean, it's all. I'm around more professional athletes that have been in the league, and I'm not coaching our players, and so I don't see it as much. But when you're around guys that have been in the league, they're at least in stage three. Like, they can speak the language. They might have to think about the language. But it's not.
They know it.
What do I not know? Mm-hmm. Most guys have gone past. If you make it into the NFL, you're past stage one and stage two fairly quick, or you're not in the NFL. But your job as a coach is to get them to stage four. It's not to have them play in stage three. It's to get them to play in stage four, and it's to help them understand some of the nuance. I will also say this, and this is mostly tight end oriented, and this has nothing to do with anybody that coached them in the past or that will coach them in the future, but this is just my general feeling on tight ends. Most coaches that coach tight ends don't work enough on route running. I had a tight end, and I watched 8 games on every tight end in the game because I didn't know who I was going to coach. And so I had a good feel on every tight end. But my guys, one of the guys that I'm talking about, I wrote, heck of a blocker, technique-oriented, understands how to get it done in the run game, does get it done in the run game, is not slow, but cannot get open downfield, cannot separate. I taught him how to double stick. We had one-on-ones. He did it 5 minutes later. The DB fell down. He came back to me. He's like, that was amazing.
He's excited.
They're just not taught how to run routes. Me, for 7 years, not to say anything, I wasn't truly taught the technique at the top of a route. I wasn't taught how to understand it. I think it would have been helpful for me to have gone through that aspect of it more than the run game aspect of it. But for tight ends, mostly we're more concerned about the technique of the run game and the overall, do you do what it says on paper, execution of the pass game, not the finite technique of the pass game. Like, I don't think it was really rare that as a route runner that a coach said, I don't like your feet at the top of the route. Like, your last two steps are not good enough, or you're wasting movement here, or you're giving a tell by leaning a certain way. But it was always in the run game. Man, that step didn't gain ground. This has got to be a step, crossover step. This has got, your hand missed to this point. Like, we're finite with our detail and technique in the run game, and we are really, really open and widespread to our detail in the pass game. And I came up with a conclusion on that. Almost everyone can really needs to execute a certain technique to get it done in the run game, and that technique is basically synonymous with every tight end. In the pass game, everybody's body type's different, every style's different, everyone does things differently. So for me, it's like kind of understanding, are you more like Tony Gonzalez, or are you more like Jordan Reed? Or what kind of guy, like, how do we build it to your technique that would work? What things would work best for you in the pass game? I think that's just hard for people to truly grasp and understand. Maybe I get it because I was asked for a short portion of my career to be more like Jordan Reed, and then for a couple of years I was asked to run routes like Tony Gonzalez, and you try to understand, like, all speed cuts versus all hard double stick cuts. And, you know, in the Al Saunders offense I was in, there was no double stick cuts. It was all speed cut, everything. You didn't double stick. You double stick, you're wrong. Like, you hook in a zone, you're wrong. You got to come full speed out of breaks and speed cut and roll. And that's what Tony did, and that's what teams have done, and different things work in different ways. But that was really, I thought, interesting to go through all of that stuff. Did you know that your Washington Redskins are sponsored by Koch Industries? That's K-O-C-H, Koch. Their 67,000 U.S. employees make a lot of things that make game day better. Greener turf, they make that. Stronger paper products for tailgating, yeah, they make that. Oh, and electronic components in TVs and smart devices so you can watch your Redskins victory anywhere. Yeah, Koch makes that too. See all they make for on and off the field at KochMakesThat.com. That's K-O-C-H, MakesThat.com. If you're looking for great tasting food at a great price, you can check out the $3.99 sub of the day at Subway. This is a Subway restaurant. It features a different 6-inch sub each day, like turkey breast on Wednesdays and the Italian BMT on Thursdays. And of course, every sub of the day is prepared on freshly baked bread, and it's topped with your choice of fresh veggies. That's one tasty value. The $3.99 sub of the day at Subway. Great food, great price at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. One thing I found was really interesting as we move forward. They didn't want to hang out with me. Like, why? They didn't dislike me, but when we were done with meetings, if I'd been a player, like, because my whole life has been as a player, mm-hmm. I'd have kicked it with the players the rest of the time. When our meetings end, you're friends with the coaches as a coach, and the players leave you. Like, do you guys want to hang out and grab dinner or something? No, coach, we're good.
I wonder why. It's kind of funny.
I guess because they look at you as a coach.
But
and
did they do things together?
That you're,
like, the four of them went to dinner and stuff?
I don't know if the four of them. I didn't hang out with the players ever. Like, it got better towards the, I think they gained trust through a week, and it would, because I hung out with some of my coaches as a player, but I do understand that, like, all right, coach, see ya.
Maybe they were, like, a little sick of you, wanting to go get dinner by themselves.
Yeah. But, I mean, we got a chance to go through a ton of stuff, and, like, for me, a ton of the having been a player, some of the life stuff and some of the experiences and some of the save your money stuff. And so, I mean, it's a mini rookie symposium. I tried to be as forthcoming and honest with everything. I also had, over this last week, those old commercials that I had, Reebok, where I punched through the drywall and caught a ball, came out. And so everyone on our team got all those through their feed. And so everyone was like, do you catch that ball? For a day and a half, every player believed on our team that I caught the ball.
Through
like,
the
you
wall.
Dummies. I'm like, no, it took like 28 tries, but finally we got it done. Like, mine was the only one without special effects. It actually was the only, to anyone that's ever watched that, that's listening, mine was the only one without special effects. It was just camera panning. They pan slow enough that nobody, when I punched through the wall, which you had to do, mm-hmm. which is not hard, they put a ball into your hand. Someone right under the wall put the ball up in your hand.
Yeah.
The camera panned from the quarterback, so you saw the ball about three quarters of the way, and then you don't see the ball for the last quarter. You just see it in my hand. So it did. It wasn't a special effects deal. And then it was even more realistic because I had to pull it back through the wall, which was not easy. You had to really blow a hole in the wall and pull it through hard. So it did make it look real. But I had them believe that I actually caught it. I'm like, yeah. And I mean, you can feel when a ball hits your hand. You just had to squeeze perfectly. And after about 10 tries, I dropped a couple. I had this whole story. They all believe.
That's hilarious.
No, it was hilarious.
Did you ever tell them?
Oh, yeah, I can't.
Okay.
I had to tell
I had him. To know.
I had to tell them. So. But it's funny because I think anybody that saw that 10 years ago, I've told the story enough times. I mean, you all know it's not real, but these guys haven't seen some of these things in your life. There were a lot of, that was another weird thing. How nervous they were to tell me all the things that they'd looked up about me. Like, I got a lot of stuff out there, right? I'm like, you ask me, I'll tell you the exact truth. I've got no reason to lie to any of you guys. So they're like, oh, coach, what about this? Like, here's the story. Here we go. Let's go. So we ended up having a really good relationship. I had one more thing. I wanted to talk about the games from the weekend, but maybe we'll do that tomorrow and get ready for the Super Bowl, the next podcast in this week. One more thing that I thought was really interesting, because I found it was the NFL PA Bowl, and the PA is the player side of all these things, and you're around a lot of people that you have the discussion of a lot of the PA rules and a lot of the different things that are going on. Some of the lockout conversations and all of that stuff were big out there, and I had something that came up that I didn't quite understand until just now. In the last collective bargaining agreement, there was a labor issue as a part of it, and there was a change made that I definitely understood, to where the team could only have a certain amount of padded practices in the regular season, and also a certain amount in training camp as well. So right now you can only wear your pads, I think, 14 times during the regular season, which I completely disagree with. But on the PA side of it, they're protecting players from those coaches who would wear pads 3 days a week every single day, and it would be hard. My argument is that those teams would weed themselves out. With today's players, like, you would weed that out. Like, we our players had pads for 2 days in this game. Mm-hmm. The third day, they all thought they were going to wear pads, and they celebrated when we told them they didn't have pads. It's like, guys, you know that pads would look better on film for all these scouts. Like, they want to see you in pads. No,
yeah.
It was a dance party for 5 minutes in the locker room when we said there was no pads. It's like, oh my gosh. But the way college has gone and high school's gone, people haven't wore pads as much. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm not going to do the tough guy, we wore pads thing. But it was interesting to watch. Like, 3 days in pads was unheard of for these guys.
Wow.
Like, unheard of. So I do get that, but I'm saying, like, those coaches that did that forever, you just couldn't do it. It would be a mutiny if you went in and said, we're going to wear pads every day. Players would quit.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Well, Coughlin just got fired in Jacksonville because the PA essentially told players around the league, don't go there. There's too much of a fine system. It's too hard.
Oof.
More because of the fine system.
How often did you guys wear pads when you played?
Well, my first year, Joe Gibbs, we wore pads every day.
Every day?
For the first year, yeah. Almost every day we wore pads. Joe didn't know any different. And I was a rookie, so I didn't know any different. But a lot of players weren't really happy about wearing pads every day. To the point where later in my career, and there were weeks where we never put pads on.
Weeks?
Mm-hmm. There's weeks now. When you only have 14 padded practices, so...
True.
If you used one every week, including the bye week, which most don't, but you couldn't, you can't do 17 weeks, mm-hmm. right? So you're going to have a couple weeks where you don't have any pads, and players now really only wear pads on, you could do Wednesday or Thursday, however you wanted to do it. You'd have one pad a day. We actually used to do it after Joe got better, and then later through my career, we'd do Wednesday, and then Thursday we'd do our run plays, and we would take the pads off after we did our run place. So when we got to our pass and our team install and some of the things, we would take the pads off. So we would just get the 12 run plays in and pads. But I loved that because you got a good feel for the run game and you get used to like your inline fits physically. So once the game came, you were accustomed to that. Also, you feel like when you're in a bad position and a back kind of runs up on you, you know how to adjust to that and stuff versus not in pads. Some of those compromising positions you never really feel. So anyways, what I didn't quite understand, and I should have looked up before I did this, but I don't really think the exact number is important, is there is an amount of time now in an NFL facility that coaches can spend with players on the field and in the offseason. There are different phases of the offseason. In phase one, a coach can't be out there with players. None of the coaches can be out there with players. In phase two, there's only a certain amount of hours. In the season, there's a certain amount of hours that a coach can stay with a player. And to that point, I look at it and I'm like, if I'm coaching in an NFL organization and a player comes to me on a Friday and says, yo, coach, can we go out and can we work on that sweet double stick that you're working on? I got to say no. I can't. I can't take you out there.
Why is that a rule?
Because it is.
But
it's because they didn't want teams taking advantage of the amount of time that you could be on the practice field. The mandatory voluntary argument, like, we're going to do this today. You don't have to come, but if you want to be on this team, you'll be here. Like a lot of that stuff, and a lot of coaches probably would take advantage of that. So I thought that was absolutely crazy. It's not just, it's not just a coach. It's anybody that works in your organization or essentially if you're on your own field. So, for example, me doing podcasts and calling game broadcasts cannot go after practice at 4 o'clock and work out with our tight ends. That would violate that code.
Wow.
And they have people watching it and counting hours. And they tally it and it goes through HR. And when players complain, they find the coaches. I think the head coach. It blows my mind. Yeah. That if I, as a player, and I'm thinking of it as a player. Like if I went out and I said, hey, look, I'd love to spend an extra hour here today.
Yeah, to get better.
Even if it's like working on an individual technique or footwork to something without pads, and tennis shoes in our bubble. Nope. Not if you're over the hours.
Wow.
So, you know, me, I'm got to find every way to try to get around this thing. So I'm like, okay, so let's say we had 10 total. I'll look it up, but every team has a walkthrough every day. What if the quarterbacks just run the walkthrough? No coaches go out there, video it. Coaches can watch it if they want to watch it. Nope. It's organized, it's structured. Coaches write a script. No chance. The only conclusion I've come up with that I have two that would circumvent this rule. One, you could sign me as a player April 15th. Give me all the stuff. Give me all the script. I could essentially go run practices, and you cut me in training day before training camp starts, so I could run the entire offseason. Or two, you could keep me on the roster if you had a spot, play me two or three plays total, and actually say, like, now we're playing this guy. But no one has enough roster space to be able to do something like that. But then you have the, is that extra coaching worth an extra roster spot? But after a year, one player would say something, there would be complaints, that would end.
Yeah.
The other side of it would be to hire strength coaches who are coaches or former players. because strength coaches in the off-season program can utilize any of the exercise they want. And so if I wanted all my receivers to work on route running skills, which I do believe running full speed routes is as good a condition as you can get, I could have a receiver go out, or I could hire an offensive lineman as a strength coach and a receiver coach as a strength. I could hire every coach as a strength coach. You can have as many strength coaches as you want, denote them as strength coaches, and our off-season program could be utilized as individual time. But that would last a year, and everyone else would go, you're circumventing the rule. Lastly, I've come up with the only thing that I think you can possibly do, in which I think every NFL team should start doing. I think the Patriots do this, based on some of the conversations I've had from the last week, is you trust that you can install your plays and run your plays via doing a bunch of them through walkthrough or without full speed contact in practice, and you utilize your practice time as individual time. Most teams right now do not spend more than 15 minutes in individual technique-oriented practice. Anyone that's listening, remember Bill Callahan came in and wanted to do the post-practice development plan, where they spent 10 minutes with their coach working on things that they need to work on from that day. It's because they don't have time to work with their players. It was brilliant. It's a good idea. But it was at the end of practice, but he still had to allot the amount of time to fit it in there to do that stuff. It's a smart deal. But really, you almost need to have 30, you almost need to double your, you should have 30 minutes with your individual groups, and you could cut it up first part of practice, second part of practice. But in doing that, you maybe even need to think about limiting some special teams or.
Yeah.
I just can't fathom that we can't practice individually to get better at things. And I've discussed this for the last couple of years for a long time, but because of the college football rules, because some of the things that we've done, we're way too team oriented. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't help players get better at their individual techniques. And we don't. It's just, there's a reason why we don't. We can't.
Yeah.
Like, if I was running the OTA program, I think they have 12 practices on the field. 6 of them wouldn't have any team install. And I've said this forever, unless I had a brand new offense and defense with a new language. Then I do want to go out and run through some of the stuff so we can put on film. So, like, I can do with one of my players who doesn't get it, I can go through the film. But in your second year in an offense or defense, do you really need to install the base offense or the base defense for all the players that have been there the year before that have all heard that language? That can run through your base stuff over and over with their eyes closed because there's unconscious competence to your base install, because there is. Mm-hmm. Your OTA should be way, way more individualized. Like, it would have been so great to go out there as a tight end and work on only tight end things for an hour and a half, a couple of the days, or one day a week. Like, today is individual day. We're going to work on the top of stems all day. We're going to work on pushing leverage to create the top of the stem. Like, we're all the little things. We're going to talk about safety location and why the safety is there and how to push leverage to this guy and where he's playing and all that stuff. We just don't care. We don't do it. But there's not time. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you 9 out of 10 coaches that hadn't coached lately professionally that were in this thing blew their minds too. Like, it's kind of an unknown little deal that there's an hour rule. That was the players who bargained that into the agreement. That was me bargaining that into the agreement because I was part of that. I was a player during that CBA negotiation. The NFL continues down this path, continue down not hitting the way you can't hit. It's going to become the WWE. It will. It's going to become Raw. It frustrates me a little bit. It's kind of scary a little bit. I get a young tight end who hasn't really been taught to run routes, or I get a young tight end who's never blocked in line, or you get a guy who's trying to, you can't develop somebody at a different position anymore. It's hard because they've never done it. and you don't have time to do it. I thought that was pretty, wild. I had a couple other things from the week, but I'll let it go at that. It was cool. It was a fun week for me.
Yeah, it sounds like it was an amazing experience.
I left practice and I stayed up late and I talked ball with coaches and I haven't got to be around that really that way. I've been fortunate because I've been around players, coaches and stuff, but I haven't been around being a part of it and getting talk ball. Like you finish practice and you go back and you sit there and you go through it like you played a softball game and you went and had a couple beers and talked about every play of the softball game and everything. You talked about your guys. It was really cool. I really loved it. So good chance to meet a lot of people. Good chance to see a lot of people around the league. I haven't got to see a lot of people around the league. I've only been here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so my NFL tree doesn't extend very far to people that I know. And so I meet a lot of really good people. Got to meet a ton of really cool players. I'm so pumped for my guys. Like, I want all my guys on teams.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like the weird uncle that calls them every game and be like, come on, man, what the hell? But anyways, I'm back. So maybe we'll get into some of these games and some of this stuff from the next week. Anything that I have like 700 pages of notes from this thing. So some of the stuff that I missed, maybe I'll go back through if I find it. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Have a good day.
Winter is the season for adventure. And if you want a car as exciting as your lifestyle, then it has to be an all-wheel drive Honda SUV. With more features, the CR-V has standard Honda sensing, more room for friends, the Pilot has seating for eight, more comfort, the HR-V has available heated seats, and more rugged. The Passport is built for adventure with ample cargo space and hidden storage compartments. Winter adventure is calling, and Honda is ready to answer. See your local Honda dealer today.
Have you heard about Creighton Farms, the private club community that's home to the Redskins? Creighton Farms is just 20 minutes from Dulles, but a world away. On top of its award-winning Jack Nicklaus signature golf course, pools, tennis courts, and other resort-style amenities, you'll find custom homes and villas that are simply extraordinary, starting at $1.5 million. For property and legal information, visit CreightonFarms.com. Or, better yet, visit Creighton Farms.
Are uninvited pests ruining your plans? Let PMSI, the pest control partner of the Washington Redskins, handle it for you. Call today for your free inspection, and they'll work around your schedule to provide you the best solution possible to defend your home territory against pests of all kinds, including mold. Visit mypmsi.com for the game plan to control the pests on your home turf. That's mypmsi.com.
At Coke, our 67,000 U.S. employees make things that make your game days better, like fertilizer for greener turf and stronger paper products for tailgating. Viewing the game from your couch? Coke also makes the electronic components and TVs and smart devices so you can watch your Redskins victory anywhere. Coke, we make that. See it all at kochmakesthat.com. That's kochmakesthat.com.